When you hear that sound, you know it can only mean one thing. As the music slowly fades out by Andrew Goldbach. We are back. Somehow, some way, only about 7 months later, the last date being into this room was March 13th. And now sitting here on September 25th, ladies and gentlemen, we are back.
The boys are indeed back
the
in
The boys
town.
Are indeed back. Baldwin boys and the Bird buzzing. Is back in the radio room for a second season. Don't know really how we got here, but nonetheless, here we are. Austin Bechtold, Nate Breisinger, Andrew Goldbach. If you don't remember us, let's go around the horn and introduce ourselves again. Nate, start us off, buddy.
All right, I'm Nate Breisinger, sophomore here at RMU, sports communication major, take part in this show, Baldwin and the Berg, also on RMU TV for Sports Talk in the Berg, Colonial Sports Center, and I am Colonial Sports Network's social media director.
He is really busy. How about someone that's busy doing other things? Goldbach?
Hi,
what are you doing?
Hi, I'm Major Goldbach. I am also a sophomore, and I'm a advertising major. And the show's just about pretty much everything I do.
Advertising. Start making our ads for the show.
Yeah, you should probably make the ad for the radio show.
Do you want to make some Mamaroo ads with me, Nate?
Yes.
So, I'm Austin Bechtold.
This semester.
That is me.
Wortley.
What do I do? I produce three TV shows. Those are fun and hard. And we have one today at 1 o'clock, RMU Focus. So... That
please tune
Andrew,
in.
Would you like to be on RMU?
Would you like to be on RMU Focus?
No, we
have tried to get Goldbach on to Century Media and RMU Everything, but no dice so far. But that's okay because he's doing his own thing.
Like, he's like the Connor Lawrence of the group.
Yeah,
he's
like
Century,
shout
but
out
he's
to
part
Connor
of the
Lawrence.
Show.
Great player in the Kmart Cup League. But that's our intro, first show back since March 13th. Before we get into everything, I just want to briefly say, or at least briefly ask. How did everyone cope and deal with not doing much of anything over the course of the past 6 months before we got back on campus at the end of August?
Thing is, I did it the only way I know how.
You played video games all day.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's amazing.
And when I wasn't, I was working.
Yeah, wow. I was working a lot. Also, one thing I picked up over quarantine that is a very, very big surprise in terms of me, I started reading.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
I started reading.
God,
wow, you my mom will like
Nate,
that
you
one.
Started it's reading. It's driven everybody mad for reading at this point.
So Nate is reading. Goldbach is playing video games. And I am just...
watching reruns of Big Brother.
I did that, yeah. I watched 2 seasons of that. But, yeah, and All-Stars is going on right now. But, you know, All-Stars. Well, yeah, I did... I worked a lot too, like Nate. I had 2 jobs. Wow. And I worked around the house. Wow. So, you know, I also kept busy. When it was weird because it felt like even though there was really nothing to do other than like play basketball, I guess, I still found a way to be working like 40, 45 hours a week. And I'm sure, Nate, you work from dawn to dusk.
There was a span of like 4 days that I logged like 70 hours. But like over like quarantine, I mean, there was ways to get around being bored. Like people could find ways. And if it was working or reading or playing video games, like there was ways to you know, find
keep
something
you,
to do.
Keep it from driving you absolutely insane.
Yep. And we're going to get Nate a sticker that says I heart reading. I also heart the Steelers. Well, at least a lot of fans do. Because they're 2-0, and why would you not like them right now? Heading into week 3 action against the Houston Texans. A couple of big topics. Big Ben looks absolutely phenomenal. He's only thrown 1 interception and 5 touchdowns in his return from his horrific elbow injury suffered in 2019. How about Deontay Johnson? Slow starts early into games with a muff punt against the New York Giants, and then in week 2 with a muffed end around, which was ended up being recovered by the Steelers. Anyway, first drives are not too great for Johnson, but once he starts getting that chemistry with Ben Roethlisberger, it turns great. He leads the team in receptions and yards. So I'll start with you, Nate. What do you make of the team in general? We're only 2 games in. Houston's 0-2, and they're going to be a hungry team going into Pittsburgh this Sunday.
You know, so far they played some subpar teams in the Giants and Broncos. I mean, they do have their moments where, and they do have their star players that, you know, could help them win games. But I think the Steelers took advantage of the games that they need to win early. And there's a stretch here throughout the early part of the season where they can string together 5 or 6 wins and without losing a game. And the Steelers team with Ben inserted back in that that lineup at quarterback, he's looked comfortable. He looks solid again. The arm looks pretty good. And he's finding his receivers left and right. Got to mention right off the top, Chase Claypool last game for the big touchdown. You know, finding his rookie receiver and then just sharing the ball. Because even now, like you see, we saw the first game, Juju Smith-Schuster was, you know, back as maybe a number one, but there's still a lot of, you know, deciding going on. And who's your number one, number two, and how it's going to set up? I mean, obviously, Deontay Johnson has the stats right now, but as of now, even the running game has sort of come back to life. Snell in week one and now James Conner in week two being the bell cow and being, you know, finding different guys that are going to step up, especially on the offensive side of things.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Ben was going to be the key to the whole season. I think we all knew that going in. And I thought when we played the Giants, he looked shaky throughout the first half. Then the two-minute drill came around, and then he started connecting passes to receivers, and then the rest was history for that game because the Giants are I mean, if we would have lost that game to the Giants.
Yeah, the Giants are bad. Now they don't have Saquon.
The Giants are really bad.
Now they don't have Saquon.
Now they don't have Saquon. And as you said, taking advantage of, like, the situations, I mean, for Denver, I mean, Drew Lock goes down. So does Sutton. I mean, the Steelers just, they didn't give up on the gas, especially with that blitzing defense. They'd never stop putting their feet off the gas.
Yeah, half my fantasy team is already out, but
We'll get to that later.
We'll get to that part of the show later. Let's get to the players that are out or in for the Steelers on the injury report. It is time for the Pittsburgh Steelers injury report, as we do every single show, because it's very important. Also important is having David DeCastro back at right guard, and he was a full participant with a knee injury. He's not played this season, but Roethlisberger is going to be happy to have him back. Looks like he's going to be ready to go this Sunday against Houston. Deontay Johnson has been battling a toe ever since the start of the season. He is full, along with Juju. He did not practice with the knee injury that's been bothering him, but sources out of the Steelers are saying, don't worry, Juju's still going to play this Sunday. Marquise Pouncey, Stephon Tuitt, and Cam Hayward all had Veterans Days off on Wednesday. They were all back to full participants. Tyson Alou had a knee injury, suffered in the last game. He was also a full participant. And then an ankle injury for J.C. Hasenhover. He was full, one of the backup reserve offensive linemen, the backup to Marquise Pouncey. So looking at it right now, I think the key really is having DeCastro back to be able to solidify the run game, because going into it, you face some teams that are rebuilding, but they're trying to get on the mend with the Giants. The Giants are rebuilding, but Denver could have been a surprise team. They lose Drew Lock, and that basically
eliminated them for the next couple of days. They lose a whole bunch of players.
They lost a lot of their offensive pieces, and they lost their defensive captain. So looking at Denver as a potential breakout team, I think 2 weeks in is no more. So looking at it, I don't think the Steelers have really been challenged. And in a home game with no crowd against a desperate Houston team, 0-2, needing a win with Deshaun Watson, great franchise quarterback, I would not be surprised if Houston comes in and takes the game from the Steelers. I would not be surprised whatsoever, just because of the disparity that they're going to be playing in. And their offense, the pass blocking is the only thing that really concerns me if I'm a Texans fan. But I think if Deshaun Watson is going to be mobile enough to be able to pick apart the Steelers defense, who was vulnerable against Jeff Driscoll last week, I think Houston's got a shot. But I wouldn't really bank on them really having that great of an opportunity late in the game if the Steelers defense can buckle down.
Yeah, that's what I mean. The way our defense has been playing as of late, I mean, the Steelers defense has been playing of late. I mean, the Texans offense has looked not very good over the past two games. I mean, the Chiefs defense is like, I mean, it was one of the better defenses at the end of the season, but like, it's still not a defense that should be able to shut you down like it did.
Right.
And then the Ravens, of course, just completely dominated them as we expected them to be. But like, I feel like the Ravens defense and Steelers defense isn't that far apart, so I feel like we shouldn't have a problem containing Deshaun Watson. But as you said, he's a great quarterback. He's probably going to be able to make things happen.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing about this upcoming game is, you know, the Texans, we all know, got rid of DeAndre Hopkins and brought in David Johnson, and so far 111 yards on the ground for Johnson over two games. That's going to be the biggest factor of this game, I think. Watson, we know Watson can play. He has playmakers at the wide receiver position. Brandon Cooks, they picked up. Will Fuller, Randall Cobb as well. So they have guys that can make plays and catch the ball. But it's all about David Johnson and how he's going to do on the ground and how the Steelers respond defensively. Cam Hayward up front, Stephon Tuitt, TJ Watt, everybody up the middle. If David Johnson has a big game, then I'd watch for this to be, you know, on the Texan side of things. If the Steelers can't stop that run game, then they definitely will have some trouble.
Yeah, and the Steelers had a little bit of problems with Melvin Gordon last week. I think in the second half they started to clean it up a little bit. Not really. Gordon kind of ran all over them, and with no Phillip Lindsay, you knew what back you were going to get, because Gordon was going to be the bell cow. They brought him in. They paid him a lot of money, and he kind of ran over the defense after Saquon was bottled up for like 6 yards the week before. But I want to talk about the Steelers running backs. James Conner, Benny Snell. Numbers right now are basically dead even, 118 and 115 yards rushing. I believe Snell has the advantage. Snell also has one fumble to Connor's one touchdown, and I think that's what right now is what is giving the advantage to Connor. That along with who's healthy at the moment. Now, we even saw after the Giants game, Connor was already hobbled, already limited in practice, but coming off of a, I guess, good Denver game, his one big run was, I believe, a 54-yard run at the very end of the game when the game was already sealed. It sealed the game for the Steelers. And I think the stats could be a little deceiving with Connor, because overall, he hasn't been great. He had one good run that helped boost the stats overall. So, Nate, you've been on the Connor train for a while. Tell me why I'm wrong to think Benny Snell eventually will be the long-term back, at least for this season.
Well, I think you stick with Connor, because the past couple years, I know last year was a bad year for him, but, you know, he's been proven in the past to be a strong runner on the ground. And this year so far, rushing 115 yards. And I know, like you said, he finished off a game with a strong run, but he was able to find the end zone, which Benny Snell really hasn't yet. And I think Connor is your guy, and I think he's a hard runner, downhill runner. He sort of just goes, and he does it. He's not a big player that's going to make some moves on guys. He sort of just goes right at it, which I think also is his problem. He doesn't give himself enough time and space to look at what holes are open, like Le'Veon Bell used to do behind that line, you know, use his vision and find the holes. I think Connor, if he waits a little bit more longer, he could find that behind players like David DeCastro or whoever's blocking downfield. Just needs to give himself a little bit more time. But I think he can still reach. He still has a lot more potential that he has not found in the NFL. And I think this year, you know, it's a week-by-week basis right now for the running game on who's going to get the ball more. And last week, Connor said, this is my turn this week coming up against the Texans. You know, he showed up against the Broncos, and now he's going to be your number one coming into this week.
Yeah, Tomlin called him the bell cow going into week one, but see what happens injury-wise. Another thing that's really interesting to watch, T.J. Watt, Derek Watt, J.J. Watt, the parents, Watts watching, Watt parents. They did a pretty good job raising their kids. T.J. comes in with 2.5 sacks. That's more than J.J. So I want to ask you guys, what's your prediction for the Watt brothers? What do you think happens between the three Watt brothers? I'll go first. I think TJ has 3 sacks. JJ has 1 sack. TJ goes at the end of the game to JJ and is like, I'm taking your Defensive Player of the Year award this year. And Derek Watt has a key special teams tackle.
That's pretty solid prediction, so I'm not going to lie. But I say TJ Watt gets 2 sacks and a fumble recovery. And then, as you said, JJ Watt gets a sack, and Derek Watt does absolutely nothing.
Yeah, it seems like every single game, T.J. Watt is making some sort of noise, whether that's with a sack, forced fumble, fumble recovery.
I was stuck between everywhere. that or a pick. It was one of the two, so yeah, I went with the fumble recovery.
He's everywhere out there, and I think just with J.J. Watt, he's getting old, and, you know, he seems every year finds himself on the injury list, every single year. So I think he's definitely got to be slowing down with his age. And I think TJ's just going to have a better statistic day than JJ.
What about Big Bud? Bud Dupuy. He's playing
He's playing out of his mind.
All right, many talk on Bud Dupuy now. Many discussion about him. I want to know what's going on with Bud Dupuy. I really want to know. We talked about this all last year. Bud before last season was a kind of a bust.
Well, I want to talk about that after.
He was just—he was average. He was okay. No one looked at Bud as someone that could be a key contributor on this roster, and as Tomlin likes to say, be able to consistently make splash plays. I think that going into it right now, Bud is flying around. He looks great. I know he's chasing a contract, but he's chasing those quarterbacks faster than he could chase any money right now. His speed is impressive right now, and it's on display every game. Now, he's not being blocked on a lot of the plays that he's making. he's making his best splash plays this season. But just seeing his speed and his ability and, you know, even if you're not blocked, being able to take advantage of that and being able to make opportunities possible after the fact, I think that's what Bud's been doing. And we saw the fumble, the strip sack fumble of Drew Lock that ended up taking Drew Lock out of the game. That kind of changed a little of the momentum in the first half before it eventually shifted in the second half back to Denver for a little bit. Bud has been, I wouldn't say a pleasant surprise, because when you pay him all that money on the franchise tag, he better be something special this year. And at the moment, he is, through 2 weeks.
Do you think that has anything to do with the emergence of T.J. Watt over the last year
or two?
Yeah, I think it's exactly what it has to do.
I think it's just sort of the overall defense. I mean, you have one guy like T.J. Watt that, you know, the O-line's going to need to block. But then on the other side, you got Bud Dupree flying in, getting after the quarterback. So I think this team is – this defense is extremely dynamic, because you have, you know, a strong D-line up front, and then you have, you know, your edge rushers and Watt and Dupree who just come flying in, and then you have a strong middle linebacker core, and then that secondary is also very good.
Agreed. And then I completely lost my train of thought. But like, yeah, and then you got the front, the ends of Hayward and Tuitt to help. I mean, there's just so many people to cover when they're rushing you. It's just, as you said, I mean, sometimes someone's going to get left unopen, and then Bud Dupree or T.J. Watt, whoever it is, makes him pay for it.
Yeah, the corners are definitely going to have to step up, though.
Agreed.
It's all good. Ball in the Bird presented by the Bechtold Resort, where you can make a deep dive into the pool all summer long, but now the pool is about to be closed.
And wait for Tommy's hoop to get put up.
You can also wait for that. It's been about 3 months for that. Now let's do a deep dive after you can deep dive into the Bechtold Resort pool. You'll have to wait a little bit for that, but you don't have to wait for the Pirates tank. Well, maybe you will. The Pirates tank is starting to tank. Does that make any sense? No, it doesn't.
Even the tank is tanking?
They've won three in a row. The tank is tanking. Pirates have won three in a row.
Make the playoffs.
Against the Cubs.
At this rate.
Playoffs, Nate. Wow, yeah. You're going on a limb. Playoffs, no, not happening. Three games left. Pirates will be in Cleveland. I am worried. As you know, on the concerned, panic, or doom little mantra that a lot of people like to go off of, I'm starting to panic. I'm really starting to panic. The Pirates are one game up on the Texas Rangers after being four games up only 3 days ago on the number one pick. And Kumar Rocker is there. And more interviews with Kumar Rocker continue to be done by the day by MLB Pipeline and various other sources. Looking at it right now, the Astros are playing against Texas. Okay. Texas maybe will win one game. Maybe they'll win one game. I'm not sure. Pirates tonight in Cleveland. The pitching matchup is Mitch Keller against Carlos Carrasco. Mitch Keller only a couple outings ago was dominant and threw a no-hitter through six.
But you know what happened?
The Pirates lost.
Because they pulled him.
Yeah, because they pulled him. And then the second game will be Joe Musgrove against Aaron Civale. Joe Musgrove with a bounce-back start in his last outing. Civale's been great for an ERA of 4 for the Indians. It's a little bit of a surprise. And then the last game for the Pirates in Cleveland will be JT Brubaker finishing off the year against Tristan McKenzie. That's a 3 o'clock game.
That's a game we probably lose due to McKenzie's great pitching.
Is it possible that the Pirates could just get swept? My hopes can be held high. Kumar Rocker will be smiling somewhere, and the Pirates will be able to take advantage of bad teams.
I don't know.
Can they take advantage of them just being bad this year and take advantage of the 60-game slate? If you can do that. Just what do you think, Golvash, is going to happen this weekend in Cleveland with a one-game lead, three games against Cleveland, the Indians maybe being able to beat the Pirates?
Well, the Indians have clinched the playoff spot, correct?
Do you wonder if they rest anybody?
Yeah, they have a chance of the division.
Okay, if they have a chance of the division, then they're gonna play hard. I don't see a chance. The Pirates may take one game.
Well, what about the Cubs? They were number one in the NL Central, and then they lay that egg against the Pirates at PNC.
I have no idea. The thing is with baseball, you really don't know until the game starts. I mean, you can say like you can
hot
say
take.
You can say like a pitcher like, oh, he's dominant, and then he'll go give up 7 runs, and then you lose. You really never know what's going to happen until you play the game.
Yeah.
So, like, you can't really make a prediction like this because you really don't know what's going to happen.
Nope.
Looking at the other matchup, though, with Houston and Texas, Houston hasn't clinched yet. So they're going to try to – they're playing to win games.
That is bad.
Which, you know, could easily be a sweep on the part of, you know, Houston taking care of Texas. And that means bad news for the Pirates, which at this point in the season, the Pirates are doing Pirate things. By winning games when they're supposed to be losing.
Jason Mackey wrote an article.
How?
Like, I believe it was like 4 or 5 days ago. And he talked to Jonathan Mayo, who's from Pittsburgh, about the possibility of Kumar Rocker in the Steel City. And it was basically an article that was stating the Pirates already have the number one pick. It was a jinx. And then the Pirates go on, win a couple games. And now, pump the brakes a little bit. We have to hold off another 3 days on the Kumar Rock. Don't buy your jerseys yet. A little concerned that, you know, the Pirates are going to do a very Pirate thing and find a way to lose the number one pick.
It'd be the ultimate Pirates move. Be the worst team the whole year, and then at the last second, start doing
the
good.
The Pirates are just giving
pick.
The Texas Rangers so much hope right now, and I feel like after being up four games, like 7 to go, they're going to find a way.
Yeah, you remember last year? Over the summer, we were talking about how the Pirates were just falling apart. The organization was a disaster. This year, 60-game season, okay, if you're the last team, so be it. But when they need to be the last-place team,
and
these last couple days, now you're starting to fall apart. Also with O'Neill Cruz, which we don't...
Let's touch on O'Neill Cruz. Was in a crash in the Dominican Republic.
And do we know? Did they say... They said he was allegedly driving. Is that confirmed that he was driving?
He was driving and had alcohol in his
system. That is the report.
Christ. And killed 3 people, so...
It is bad.
So he's not playing?
Conflicting reports are coming out of the DR every day. And basically, one of the things that I've been hearing... is that Cruz could face 3 years of jail time.
3 to 5, I believe.
Maybe 5. Supposedly, they hit a motorcycle, I believe, that had no lights on, so they just could not see the motorcycle. I believe that's the case. And it's not looking great for Cruz. The Pirates don't have a good history of people getting arrested in the past year or so.
It's just the ultimate Pirate thing. A top, like, interesting prospect that, like, people have real intrigue about, and O'Neill Cruz goes and does this.
The consensus number one pick. After being in Altoona for how long at the alternative training site, gets back to the Dominican and something like this happens. That's just the curse that is on the Pirates right now. And I don't know how you shake it. But, you know, Pirates, 3 games left. Cleveland Indians, Mitch Keller starts tonight. I think, well, what's your prediction? I'm going to say that the Pirates find a way to blow it. I do. I think it's going to be a virtual tiebreaker, and then somehow, some way, Texas is just going to magically win the tiebreaker. I don't know how, but they are.
I think Houston will win 2 out of 3, and I think the Indians will win 2 out of 3. So I think the Pirates do get the edge of the last place team.
You think the Pirates are gonna hold on?
Yeah, I think they'll hold on, Pirates. But I think everybody's gonna get real real scared because I think they're gonna lose the first game tonight, and then they're gonna win the first game tonight, and then the Pirates will go and lose their last.
I'm just waiting for Ben Cherington during the middle of a game to call down to Derek Shelton and then just say,
"What are you doing? Put Dobie Dotson.
I'm losing Kumar right now. Come on, Derek." You want good players on your roster in a couple of years?
Go ahead and throw them in. But yeah, I honestly, I'm waiting for.
You know, hold on. I want to say one thing. You know that we're back on campus when you see the tours continuously walking by the radio.
They were standing outside for five minutes, watching us
look like absolute lunatics.
Sometimes the best thing to do when you're out here, just in the radio room, just vibing like we're doing right now, is just wave. Just wave to the tour. Say hello. Make them feel comfortable. Make it feel friendly.
I don't think we've ever waved.
No, we have waved. I haven't.
I want to send a virtual wave to Josh Selzer, who's a big fan of this show. We know he's probably not listening, but we want to send one anyway. Another thing that is just going wrong in Pittsburgh is the Penguins. A lot of people are calling out GM JR for just absolute What is the word? Like, I don't even know what
he's going to.
Surprising?
I'll take this. JR should be in a retirement home.
Okay, I wouldn't say that.
He's running the Pens into the – he's trying to run the Pens to the ground the same way he did with the Canes after they won their cup.
You know, in 06. It's tough to say because you look at some of these trades that he's made recently – And you can't really talk about them in terms of if it's a really good or bad trade because you haven't seen these guys played and what type of effects they've had on the team, as he's had some trades that have been really good and some trades that have been bad. So I think a trade like the Mike Matheson and Colton Sevier deal to get them into here and trade Hornquist, we just have to watch and see. I think that's what it is. It's a waiting game. I mean, Colton Sevier, I don't know how he's going to fit on this roster right now. I mean, he's a bottom six forward in his career, 454 games, 59 goals, 82 assists, 141 points. The dude is replacing Hornquist. Like, he is another Patrick Hornquist, except this dude fights at a much more consistent rate, which is not what the Penguins need. We do not need fighters. Like, Ryan Reeves was the last guy, really, who was a certified fighter on this team, and now you bring in a guy who fights relatively often.
Yeah.
Find someone to protect Sid.
And then on the back end, bringing in Matheson.
We watched, offensively minded defenseman.
He can be inconsistent at times. He can, you know, have defensive lapses. But offensively, he seems to provide a little bit of a spark. He's very agile on his skates, and he can make a lot of moves, and he's a strong skater, and he can shoot the puck. So. Mike Matheson gives them another option on defense. He's better than Jack Johnson. So
how many left defensemen can the Penguins possibly have on the roster?
Do you want to know what Rutherford's response was? Somebody's going to have to play right defenseman. That was his exact words. Well, I mean, as I said to all my other friends when I talked about this, why not just go and trade for a right defenseman? Why go trade for a left-handed shot or like a left-handed D-man when you need a right-handed D-man? Just doesn't make sense. Like. I don't know. I was wrong on the Tanev signing. Maybe I'll be wrong on this one, too.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people are talking about how Hornquist was such a critical part to winning two cups, and he was, and how, you know, the bond between the players and him is, you know, undeniable. And there was reports that came out about when Rutherford moved Carl Hagelin after they had won and had a bad postseason showing, losing in the second round against the Caps. They moved him along. Supposedly there was players crying in the locker room when he got traded. And if it's the same way with Hornquist, look, any sports, it's a business. So there's going to be moves that are made, and I think
that people aren't going to like.
I think as a fan, you got to understand that has to happen. Now, some of them, at first, you can have your first reaction and say they're good or bad. And some of them turn out to be bad from the get-go. But right now, you can't make any assumptions on this. They're two players that have sort of not been really known around the league, to be honest. You don't hear these guys on an everyday basis, even monthly basis. I mean, they're guys maybe that'll pop up every once in a while on some highlights. Because, I mean, Matheson and Sevier, they're not goal-scoring machines. So you have to wait and see. Hornquist was a, you know, really lovable guy in Pittsburgh. Great net front presence. Which I think Sevier brings the same, you know, ability to get in front of the net and bang in a couple goals. So it's a big loss in Hornquist, but you're also relieving, you know, some of his contract to bring in two guys who are actually more though the contract.
Matheson's contract is the one that I'm really concerned about. Yes,
yeah, Matheson's contract
signed for 6 years.
It's an ascending deal because he starts off at I believe $2.5 million and then it goes up in his last 3 years. Yeah, he has a $2.5 million signing bonus in each of the final 3 years.
It has the potential to be as bad as Jack Johnson's deal.
That's my. It's a lot of money for a lot of years for a guy that sort of has been okay in the league. I mean, for the Panthers' sake, yeah, he was probably a top three defenseman on that team, but they're the Florida Panthers. So
when the trade was announced, I heard that he was probably one of the worst defenseman on the team in terms of defensively wise, but he couldn't. I think he's going to be one of those dudes where if he's not producing offense, he's not going to be producing much at all. Because, I mean, we haven't seen. I mean, that's just my take on it, but I'm going to have to watch an actual game because I haven't really seen him play, like you said. I'll have to see if he's good. If he's not good defensively, then this contract's going to have some real issues.
So what about the other center that they brought in, Nate, included in the deal? His name was what? Colton?
Yeah, we were Colton just talking. He's kind of like Hornquist, but he's younger.
Yeah. He's just another person you can plug in place and up
31.
And down the lineup.
I mean,
he's 31?
Yeah, he's older.
Not that young. Okay.
I thought he was younger
than
that.
That's why I further do not get this trade from Rutherford's standpoint. I don't understand it.
Yeah, he's a scrappy player. He's a plug-and-play type guy. I mean, if you want to put him up with Crosby, I don't know how much he's going to do because, I mean, you already have Gensel and probably Zucker who's going to play up on that first line. Or Kasperi Kapanen will play up there.
It looks like another fourth-line guy.
Yeah, he's just a guy, and it's another contract that's, I mean, he's not on for a lot. But it's just sort of a little confusing.
Little filler for the team.
Yeah, you're trading Hornquist, I guess, to bring in another Hornquist-style player for cheaper and then get an offensive-minded defenseman, which, to be honest, besides Chris Letang, the Penguins really don't have that much.
Schultz?
In terms of, like, jumping up into the play. Schultz does, but he's not, like, he doesn't possess, like, the skating skills that Chris Letang does, or even Mike Matheson. I think they can jump up, both Letang and Matheson. Matheson, I think you'll see they'll utilize that aspect of letting him come up into the play and be a backdoor guy down either side of the net.
Yeah, I agree with that. We saw that a lot in his highlight films. Him, as you said, jumping up into the play and being really aggressive, and something the Pens really haven't had a chance to have. So I think Sullivan will gladly like to have him and use that in his offensive schemes.
All right, well, that's enough Penguins for now. We'll see what ends up happening because this has to be the beginning of a domino effect for Jim Rutherford. There has to be more moves coming. There has to. This is only the beginning.
Yeah, I mean,
I would think the assistant coaches now Hornquist. There's definitely going to be more.
There's been a lot of talk about Matt Murray being moved with, you know, a lot of teams looking in interest, including the Wild, the Sabres,
or. Maybe he gets offered up to the Kraken, but I doubt that'll happen because he'll definitely be traded.
I think in terms of him, they want to trade him. They want to get something back because when you lose him in the expansion draft, you're not going to get anything back for him.
Maybe they'll bring Fleury back. What do you think of those rumors?
Well, here's the thing.
I think it's a possibility.
Well, here's the thing.
My dad was saying he's really into that because since they signed Leonard, Fleury's obviously going to go. It's going to be a So he's going to come back and play his final years here and maybe help win us a cup.
Yes, Fleury would be a very nice addition to have as your goaltending tandem with probably Tristan Jarry, which it seems like it's going to happen because Murray's probably going to get moved.
Probably.
But you're going to have the same situation that is going on right now in the past 3 years. No one can decide whether it's Murray or Fleury, Murray or Jarry. You bring Fleury back in and it's Jarry or Fleury. You want Fleury to start because he's been a lifelong Penguin, except for a few seasons. And then you have Jarry, who was an all-star this past year, who couldn't even start in the playoffs because Murray was, you know, claimed to be better, which he had an okay postseason.
I want to talk about that because I thought Murray played phenomenal in that series.
He played pretty well. Yeah,
yeah
he played
phenomenal. I thought a lot of people, you know, were doubting him going into the series, and he held his own. And I know the Penguins should have never lost to the Canadiens, but it happens. You know, teams come in and surprise teams, and especially when you only have 2 weeks to prepare going into this bubble postseason, you know, a lot of things were different. And I think a lot of guys, especially offensively, you know, maybe weren't up to speed with everything that was going on, and the younger Canadiens just took advantage. I think Murray played well and held his own, like I said. But you bring in Fleury, and I think you have – the same situation you've been dealing with the past 3 years.
Yeah. Well, I hope Matt Murray stays because definitely use $30 Matt Murray jersey sale was very nice, and I took advantage of that. So I would like to still be able to wear that if possible. Let's move on to the NBA, National Basketball Association. Speaking of jerseys that people like to wear, Golvash, before we get into the NBA segment, tell us about your two new jerseys that you bought online.
My jersey acquisitions?
Yeah,
you know,
tell us about that.
When you start working at Amazon, start making $15 an hour, you can buy. I finally decided, you know what? I'm going to start getting my NBA jersey collection.
You have some spending money that you don't have to spend on video games. You can put some jerseys right now.
Exactly. And then I bought Ja Morant, little Grizzlies throwback, one of the coolest jerseys I think I've ever bought. And then the next one I thought Austin was also a big fan of. Tracy McGrady Orlando jersey.
Yeah, I like it. Definitely one of those old-style jerseys with the It looks like, you know, the jersey just pops, you know, with the, you can feel the numbers.
Exactly.
You know, it's one of those old school, like a stitched NFL jersey, basically.
Yes, that's basically what it was.
I think I'm going to get Alex Caruso jersey.
No, you're not.
That's what I have to.
Yeah, I think you should.
I am not. Alex Caruso.
Well, actually, I think a jersey of someone who we should be getting is Jamal Murray.
Well, I think one jersey that we should be getting before that is Tyler Hero. And why should we be getting Tyler Hero?
Hero
ball. Because it's time for the irrelevant fact of the day with Austin, as we do on every show. Today's relevant fact of the day involves Tyler Hero. And on Wednesday's Sports Talk in the Berg, a bold prediction was made to Tyler Gallo by myself. I said, we don't have the clip. I wish that would be kind of cool if we could just play that. But I told Gallo in our segment, I was like, Gallo, hot take, as I pointed to the camera. I said, Gallo, Tyler Hero is the best shooter since Steph Curry was drafted. I did not say he was better than Steph Curry. He would be the two. Right now, Tyler Hero is probably the second best shooter in the NBA. Thoughts?
No.
That's the irrelevant fact of the day. And then what happened? And then what happened? Tyler Hero went berserk. He went off. Golvash, he had 37. Well, he's never had that high in his career.
Well, I know, but I love Tyler Hero as a player. He is an absolute dog. But the best shooter, it goes to someone else on that team. Duncan Robinson.
No, Tyler Hero's just balling out, man.
I like Duncan Robinson as a shooter better than Tyler Hero. Tyler Hero will always score more points than him, but Duncan Robinson is the better shooter.
All right, so let's talk about that series. Boston-Miami in the NBA. Miami's up 3-1 on Boston. As Goldberg walked by the radio,
yeah!
He was very excited with his bright orange shirt today after telling me he wouldn't be able to make the show. Here he is. Tyler Hero, as we said, 37 points, 6 boards, 3 assists. Jason Tatum at 28 for Boston. Miami's defense is just scrappy, who would have seen this? Miami's defense is just scrappy, but in the fourth quarter, it was just a back-and-forth scoring affair. 35 points for Miami, 33 for Boston to close it out. It was kind of even the whole way with Miami just kind of edging out Boston in the second quarter. So I want to ask you guys, I think it's kind of clear to say that Miami's got a great chance to go to the NBA Finals. Who would have thought this would happen with Jimmy Butler over there? I never really liked Jimmy Butler. I just thought, you know, he didn't fit in Philadelphia. He tried to be the guy too much in Minnesota. I never liked him as a player, but I really respect what he's doing in Miami right now. He's really become the leader of that team, and he has really shaped their identity from the fifth seed in the East. We don't know what they are to they're going to the finals.
Exactly. But the thing is with Jimmy Butler, yeah, you could say all those things. He's a bad teammate and all that stuff, but dude's a flat-out winner.
Yeah, winning follows him everywhere he goes.
Everywhere he goes. And then whenever he leaves.
Not really. Where's winning follow him?
I mean, last time the Bulls were in the playoffs.
He was on the team.
And then they make the playoffs.
Congrats. Can you go to the Eastern Conference Finals?
No, but he led teams to playoffs that typically don't find themselves in the postseason.
I mean, the Sixers, their farthest run was with Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Exactly.
I mean, it does help when you have Ben Simmons and Embiid, but and Tobias Harris.
I'm not.
And J.J. Redick.
But look what they did this year. The Sixers didn't even get out of the first round.
And now you see the Heat are getting ready to move on
and then
to the finals.
And then, as you said, the Heat were middle of the pack contenders. Once Jimmy Butler gets there, he's just a hardworking dude, and he works hard and inspires his teammates to do better.
Well, I think you have to give some credit to the improvement of Bam Adebayo. He had 20 points and 12 boards in
the last game. The emergence of Bam does help, but Jimmy Butler is that closer that they had, like D-Wade was. I'm not saying he's nowhere near D-Wade, but he's able to close out games like I've never seen anyone be able to do so far.
Yeah, I think this Heat roster just up and down is really solid and has a lot of different guys that are playmakers and that can finish. And I think, you know, the Celtics were a team that everybody were eyeing up to be the team that represented the East in the NBA Finals. But the Heat, like we said, have sort of surprised. But they have a good roster, and they can maybe take the Lakers 6 or 7 games.
I just can't see that.
I don't think they'll beat the Lakers. I don't. I'm all on Team L.A. Braun and the Los Angeles
Lakers. The Heat stand no chance. And I like the Heat.
Wow, are you kidding me?
They
stand no chance. The Lakers' old and beat up roster isn't that great, okay?
I still think it's good.
I mean, the 1-2
punch. It's good. They're up 3-1 on Denver.
The 1-2 punch of AD and Braun is going to be too much.
I think, you know, after that, you know, you have you have some strong players that are on the roster for the Lakers, but I think overall, looking at the Heat roster, they just have different guys that have been able to step up, and I think they'll definitely give them some trouble. I'm not saying that the Heat are going to win, but I think you're going to see a 6 or 7 game series, most likely 6. I think the Lakers will find a way to close it out earlier than later. But with the emergence of Tyler Hero all season and then coming into the postseason and really stepping up, I think they'll give them some trouble.
We'll have to see if the offense can get past the defense of the Lakers with playoff. The way Rondo's playing right now, he's probably going to have to go on like Hero and all those guys and see how he can hold up.
What do you make
them.
Of Denver right now?
Yeah, you can't even say that the Lakers are going to end up in the finals because, the Nuggets
have been down 3-1.
Lakers are up, but they can't take their foot off the pedal because Denver, they're known for this. They've done it twice already.
Don't worry about L.A. Bron, but Jamal Murray in the last game, 32 points. Michael Porter Jr., he's just got to play. They got to play him more.
You know who else they have to play?
Who do they have to play?
Bol Bol.
I know. They really should play Bol Bol. Their roster is so deep.
I mean, their team, it's working right now.
It's such a deep team that they don't need to play them.
Yeah, I know. Because when you intentionally just get down 3-1 every series just to, make miraculous comebacks, doesn't matter because they'll put their foot on the gas pedal now, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Now they're going to start going.
Yeah. Gary Harris has to step up. He had three points last game.
He's been quiet all playoffs,
He's been quiet. I mean, he was battling injuries, but still, Gary Harris is a guy that, he's starting. He's a pretty good shooter whenever he's able to play. Paul Millsap's also been bad. Those are two guys that I look for Denver that need to step up if they want any chance to be able to come back in this 3-1 series, which, we know they're capable of.
Yes, obviously.
And I think it relies heavily on Murray because we've seen against the Nuggets and we saw last run that he was against the Clippers that he sort of just carried this team to victory. He was, a winning mentality of, and he was just motivated to win, and he took this team to new heights that no one thought coming into this postseason. People thought they were going to be done against the Jazz. Donovan Mitchell, Jamal Murray, which was an incredible matchup. Watching those guys trade buckets back and forth, going down the court. I mean, they would just feed Murray and Mitchell the ball, and then they would just
watch them work.
Yeah, make every shot almost. But I think Murray and then Nikola Jokic, I think the issue, though, this series so far, LeBron and AD just for a long time have just been some of the top players in the league. And I think they still are, arguably better than both, obviously than Murray and Jokic. But the thing is size. LeBron head-to-head with Murray, I know they don't match up on the court, but they're two-star players. They're just bigger than Murray and Jokic. So I think that's been the issue. And AD also adds that three-ball aspect, and I know Jokic can shoot from three as well, but not as consistent as AD can.
All right, give me your prediction. Who goes to the finals? If both teams up 3-1 right now, go.
I'm sticking to my guns. I'm sticking Lakers Heat. I don't think that. I think the Nuggets will push it to 7, but I think the Lakers will take it in the end.
I think East is pretty much wrapped up. I know the Celtics have a lot of good players: Kemba Walker, Jason Tatum. They have the ability to come back, but I think the Heat sort of have it wrapped up with the way they've been playing. And I just think the spark of the Nuggets throughout this postseason have given them a shimmer of hope, being down 3-1 to the best team in the NBA. But I'm going to continue to ride that train of them upsetting teams. And I think the Nuggets will pull three straight times coming back 3-1.
You can only pull that rabbit out of the hat so many times.
Yeah, I'm not buying it.
Record-setting season for the Nuggets.
Yeah, I'm not buying it either. They did it to the Clippers because I don't even know how it happened to the Clippers. They had no big man for Jokic. They had no answer for Jokic, but they got that answer in Jokic and AD. So this is going to be fun to watch.
I'm all aboard LeBron train right now. I think the third title for his third team is very possible. It would be a phenomenal feat, to say the least. And
I think that me and Nate looked this up. Only two other players in history have done that, and they've been John Sally and
Horry.
And Robert Horry.
John Sally and Robert Horry. Yeah, none of the capabilities of LeBron.
Yeah, exactly. None of the capabilities of LeBron. None of them have been the complete face of the team, no matter where they've gone.
But, no, that's going to be impressive. And when the Last Dance was supposed to air during LeBron's anticipated title run for the Lakers going all the way, and I just think it would be very interesting to see if The Last Dance ran during the playoffs, if it ran right now, what the identity would be. Because we saw when it ran in over quarantine,
everyone was saying,
everybody was like, "Oh God, Jordan, this guy's just insane," and I did too, and he is. But I do wonder if LeBron. I think the LeBron GOAT category is probably dead after the documentary. I still think Jordan. I don't know if he'll be able to top Jordan. Even if he wins this finals, I think he gets a lot closer. I just don't think after that whole documentary that there is a way for Jordan to be passed, because I think the younger generation has been educated by that documentary, and I think they're able to see just how prolific of a scorer and how global he made the game. And I think that's just – I think that's what gives Jordan the advantage over LeBron. But I'm going to go LeBron and the Lakers. I think the Lakers win the finals. I really do. I think the only team standing in their way was the Clippers.
It's a storybook ending.
Yeah, I think the Clippers were the only team that would be potentially standing in their way. So I'm going with LeBron. And next week when we do our new segment where Austin was right, where Austin was wrong, we'll see if I was right on that or not. And I'm going to go with Miami. I really like Boston's roster, but I've been burned by them way too many times now.
I think we say it like almost every year how the Celtics, this is their year. This is their year. Then something just derails it, and they just can't get by, and they can't make it to that finals that they've so wanted to get to.
Yeah, they still got a little bit of room to be able to make up and being able to figure it out. But let's talk about some college right now. College football, college basketball, we have a start date. Nate, college analyst, take us away in the world of college football.
Well, with sort of news as of late, Big Ten announcing a few weeks ago that they'll be back starting October 23rd, and now just the other day, Pac-12 announcing that their start date is expected to be November 6th. You know, and it's so interesting.
They realized that their decisions originally were not going to be taken very well.
Yeah, I mean, and it's also interesting to see that throughout this whole process, how much the Pac-12 has been piggybacking off of the Big Ten. Whatever the Big Ten does, Pac-12 follows suit after them. Yeah, it's not surprising, but it's kind of interesting to see how Big Ten was leading everything, and then even conferences like the ACC and SEC didn't follow suit. And you know, there are a couple games already into their season. We've seen a lot of cancellations, though, because of the rise in virus cases among teams, and also contact tracing has been a huge problem.
Yeah, Pitt's also had some false positives.
Yeah, there's been just a lot of flaws in the system in regards to COVID-19, and it's just... You know, for college football, there's so many teams. You can't all put them into a bubble, obviously. I mean, if you wanted to find a way to put the Power 5 schools in, because, I mean, there's been no team outside of the Power 5 that has made it to the college football playoff. So, if you wanted to stick Power 5 teams in a bubble, which I think it's too hard. But right now, I mean, the ACC is moving along. Big 12, SEC is ready to start up. You know, a lot of top 25 matchups coming out of the SEC this week, which is going to provide for some great college football, which I think is something that everybody missed. I mean, a lot of people missed, obviously, sports in general, NHL, NBA coming back. But I think college football is just something, when it comes fall time, you're looking forward to that. Just with the NFL, they go hand in hand, you know, Saturday, Sunday.
Just back-to-back days.
It makes up your weekend.
It really does.
Yeah. Before we dive in a little bit more coming up, into the shout-outs, I want to give a quick shout-out to our buddy Dorian Ford for committing to Pitt.
Yes, you called it. You told me he was going to Pitt.
I don't think it really surprised anybody at all, but I just wanted to give a little shout-out to Dorian for that. Good guy. Happy for him. And I think alongside Elliot Donald, you know, he's capable for a lot of really good things.
I mean, Pitt, they already have a strong defensive line. I mean, Rashad Weaver and Kayshon Camp coming back to replace Jalen Twyman, who's arguably one of the best D linemen in the nation. And you lose him, but you have Weaver come back. Weaver was the defensive player of the week this past week.
Him and
in college football.
Ellie, who? Him and Bright?
Cam Bright was for ACC, but national player of the week was Rashad Weaver. With 1.5 sacks, you know, and his return against a Syracuse team, which does not have a good offensive line. I mean, Pitt got to the quarterback seven times, which just is a common trend among the Orange. Even looking back to last year, I mean, Pitt was able to get back there so many times. And Pitt just has a really strong defensive line. You have Devlin Danielson from TJ, who's another Whipple guy. But you have an all-Whipple line that is going to replace some of these guys that are moving on, like Weaver, Camp, Twyman, and Patrick Jones. Four big-time players that are leaving, and you have Elliot Donald, Dorian Ford, Dayon Hayes, Nike Johnson, all coming in, all going to plug in, probably play as freshmen and sophomore next year.
Probably.
That line.
Beautiful to watch.
And, you know, finally Pitt is finding their identity under Pat Narduzzi. And coming in, Pat Narduzzi was looked at as a defensive-minded head coach. And his first two seasons were it revolved around the offense. You know, they put up – in 2016 put up the best offensive statistical year for Pitt football. But now, finally, their defense is coming into fruition of what he – you know, what his bigger picture was when he first stepped in as the head coach for Pitt. And as of now, they're 2-0 coming into this week. They take on number 24 Louisville at Pitt, which is the first top 25 at Heinz matchup at Heinz Field since the early 2000s.
Wow.
Pitt finally finding themselves ranked in a season that it's hard not to find yourself ranked if you're 2-0 early in the season, because there's not enough teams to fill that top 25 rankings, because Big Ten and Pac-12 haven't played any games, so have the SEC, even though they have SEC teams lined up and down the top 25.
All right, let's move on to our special segment of the day, the fantasy segment, as we wrap up the show.
Fantasy Weekend Outlook.
Fantasy and the Austin Weekend Bechtel Outlook.
This is interesting.
Right, and this, let's the look league, at our teams. The league name is This Ain't Baldwin Anymore.
Yeah, I've been trying to think Baldwin of a rename. Trend.
Well, I don't know what the I'm in trouble. Now. Because do you want to hear my running backs?
Here, give us a quick look at your roster okay. for Austin's league.
Well, do you want me to read it now?
Just yeah, quick. Go,
or
go
what it would
it.
Be?
Go through it.
Okay, Kyler Murray, Jamal Williams, Giovanni Bernard, Mike Evans, Amari Cooper, Darius Slayton, Darren Waller, Jerry Jeudy, Steelers D, and Will Lutz.
So who are you without? Who went down for you?
McCaffrey and Cam Akers both went down.
Ooh.
McCaffrey, big loss. I have him in another
and
league.
Cooks and Harry are questionable.
Yeah, for Austin's league, I have Tom Brady, Nick Chubb.
Oh, wait, yeah, and so is Waller and Jeudy. They're both questionable.
Yeah, and I have Nick Chubb, Leonard Fournette, Julio Jones, who's listed as questionable right now, had only 4 points last week, which he's supposed to be my big-time guy for this league because I was projected to finish last. In this league,
yeah,
I'm 1-1. I'm 1-1. Austin's 0-2. He's headed to the last place. We're shaving his head.
We're shaving your head.
I'm very bad.
We're shaving his head if
you lose. So I host the league. I host the league, and I'm really bad at just. I'm really bad at this fantasy thing, and I'm good in Nick Woods' league. I'm 2-0 in that, but I'm 0-2 in my own league.
How many people are in that league?
8.
That's why.
Probably we have 12. So the roster for me is Deshaun Watson, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I picked up Mike Davis from Carolina. I picked him up because I have injuries everywhere. Robert Woods, Marvin Jones. I had Preston Williams too. Travis Kelce, Mike Gesicki, the Saints defense, and Chris Boswell. My bench is Devin Singletary, Christian Kirk, who is, I guess, now hurt. Antonio Gibson, who I thought would be the surprise of the year and really hasn't been yet.
Hasn't.
Sony Michel from New England. I have Kirk Cousins, Cole Beasley, Keenan Cole. I picked him up off waivers. And then my IR is Cortland Sutton and Paris Campbell. So my wide receivers are very
depleted.
Not great.
I mean, and speaking of Paris Campbell and the Colts, Jonathan Taylor has sort of lived up to expectations thus far.
And then the fantasy surprise of the year, James Robinson out of Jacksonville. Yeah. 230. He had 21
points
20,
in Austin's league.
And he had 21 the week before that. And now he's got 30.9.
Yeah, another week he goes off. I'm playing the person who has him, Tommy.
Tommy
has Robinson.
You're raised to Jolly Roger?
No, yeah, I'm Jolly Roger.
Jolly Roger.
Yeah.
Jolly Roger.
And now
my team name, I have to keep it, my team name is Sauston Bunktold.
Sauston Bunktold. And now for a new segment that Austin is bringing on to the show, the mystery caller segment. So mystery caller, hold on. Before we get to the mystery caller, I want my co-host here to take a guess on who you think this week's mystery caller is as we start this new segment. You think
it's Tommy?
You think it's Exler? Mystery caller, state your name.
My name is Joey Shields.
Oh my god! I didn't.
It sounds like he just got out of bed.
That's because he did. Joey Shields, you just got out of bed, and you're going to break down your fantasy roster because you have already beaten. You beat me in week one. Nate beat me in week two. Tell me what your roster. Tell me your roster.
I put to my first opponents. I whipped Tommy's butt last week. It was a pretty drastic stuff.
Wow. Okay, so
it's been a good first couple weeks for me. I've gotten great performances out of Russell Wilson, a good first week performance out of Juju. I've had a couple guys to come out of nowhere to put up some points for me, like LaVisca Chenault, who had a good first week, Aaron Jones, who had a great last week.
Isn't he
a
dude out of Colorado?
My team's just doing pretty well across the board right now. It's showing.
Yeah, I was a little concerned when LaVisca Chenault, you called him up and he had like 17 points to beat me. That's after I had Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Travis Kelce, and Deshaun Watson, who went off. I thought I was actually going to do well for fantasy the one year we do Money League. Anybody have a question?
I thought you would go to beat me for sure. Hey, I was talking all kinds of crap on you.
Who?
I was talking a little bit of crap before our matchup, and I thought you were going to beat me.
Yeah, I did too, Joey. Joey prevailed. Anybody have any question for Joey?
Joey, quick pick. Who's your NBA Finals? Who wins the NBA Finals this year?
Lakers. I want anybody but the Lakers to win, but I think the Lakers are going to end up pulling it off.
See, Joey's on board with me. He really thinks.
Got to ride the train.
We're going to win. Quickly, anything else from you, mystery caller Joey Shields?
Go Pitt. Better beat Louisville this weekend.
Ooh. Oh yeah. Go Pitt. Joey's going to head back to bed now.
All right, Joey.
I'll go in on the RMU radio show. Sorry.
Thanks for coming on RMU radio, Joey. Thanks for waking up when we know eventually when Colin's turn is up for the mystery caller, he will not wake up.
You know he won't wake up.
So we appreciate it.
There's no point in calling Colin.
Thank you for coming on the show, Joey Shields. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
I don't like him.
Your mystery caller, Joey Shields.
That is our new favorite segment, the mystery caller.
I
don't like that dude at all. He's whack.
Joey Shields went to Baldwin with us, graduated with us. He's in the fantasy league. So we brought him on for the fantasy segment. Be ready for every week for mystery caller, as I already have the next 2 weeks lined up for guests. So mystery caller is going to be a fun segment, and I'm really looking forward to it. So now let's do some predictions for this weekend. Steelers, Pitt, Pirates draft, which we kind of already talked about.
We'll kind of recap that again.
Let's start with the Pirates draft. I said I think it's going to be a struggle, and whoever wins the tiebreaker, which I think is Texas, gets it. I'm a little concerned, and I'm going to say that the Pirates tank the tank, and Texas gets the number one pick, and I hope I'm wrong.
I hope you're wrong, but I say the Pirates prevail, and we end up getting the number one overall pick.
I agree with Goldvash. Pirates land number one overall pick.
I sure hope that happens. Next thing up for grabs, Steelers against Houston. Do the Texans go to 0-3, Nate?
No. I think the Texans are going to come in and take this game. I think Deshaun Watson's going to have a solid performance, and I think it's going to be a quarterback duel, but I think Watson is going to come out on top and beat the Steelers defense.
Honestly, Watson hasn't looked as sharp this year as he has in previous years. I don't know what it is, but I think the Texans struggle and go to 0-3. Steelers move to 3-0.
I think this is going to be the first time the Steelers are really tested. And I think being at home, it doesn't really create that much of an advantage as it used to, but I still think it's something. And I actually think that even though I think they're going to be down at halftime by about, I think they're going to be down a touchdown at halftime, but I think they're going to prevail. I think you're going to see a lot of Boswell field goals. But I'm going to say 28-24. I think the Steelers are going to go to 3-0 and really put the Texans in a hole.
And my score prediction is going to be, it's going to be 28-17.
I'll go 24-14, Texans.
All right, here we go. Pitt, Louisville, big matchup between ranked opponents, Nate.
I think Pitt loses the first game of the year to Louisville. I think Louisville possesses a really strong passing game and running game. Malik Cunningham can throw the ball. He's similar to Lamar, not at the same high standard, but he's a good player. He can run the ball also. And the running game, I think it'll be too much for Pitt. I think their secondary is going to get picked apart. Louisville wins this one. I think high scoring game, 35-31.
I'm actually going to go on the side of PITT, let's go Pitt. I think Kenny Pickett is going to be, Kenny Pickett, usually I rip on him and he's not great. I think Kenny Pickett's going to go off for four touchdowns and Pitt's going to win 35-28. I don't know. I just think that we've had a lot of these Pitt letdown games, and I think Narduzzi's not going to let that happen this time. Yeah. I really don't, and I think Pitt wins.
I agree with Nate. This Cunningham dude team seems like he's going to be a problem for that Pitt defense, and I think he's just going to pick them apart. And I think it's going to be a high scoring affair with 40-32.
All right, well, let's do some shout outs. Goldvash, start us off.
All right, I would like to shout out my mom, who doesn't even know the show's on today.
I didn't tell her, but I will manage to tell her. I like to shout out my mom, my brother, and all the boys back home.
I'd like to shout out my mom and grandma. I believe they're listening. Supposedly we were having some technical difficulties.
Oh, come on. We always do.
Supposedly the show was cutting in and out. I don't know how it's been the past 15 minutes.
Well,
but give
us a break. Supposedly recording pretty well.
Shout out Corin, too, because I believe she's listening.
Yeah, Corin's listening.
Corin.
A few solid listeners right there. So those are my shout outs.
I want to shout out, obviously, the fam. Everybody back at the Bechtel Resort. Everybody else listening.
And Tommy, and Tommy's hoop.
Tommy's hoop, that's hanging out in the yard, still has to be put up. I want to thank Joey Shields, our mystery caller for the week, for coming on. I think my dad's listening, so shout out to dad for sure. And anybody that might be listening, oh, my dad just sent me a thumbs up, so he is listening.
Yeah!
So I also want to shout out anybody that might be listening that didn't tell me that they're listening. Because shout out them.
Thank you.
We
appreciate the support.
Thank you. Thank you, random listeners.
You know who you are. That, I guess, is all. Anybody have anything extra to add in the final couple seconds here?
It's a goal, Stillers.
It's a big football weekend for Pittsburgh.
It is a big football weekend and a big conclusion to baseball. What will happen? Who knows?
Big weekend in sports.
Big weekend in sports.
Big weekend in sports.
Big weekend in sports. So, Baldwin and the Berg, no closing music, I guess. We're still going.
Did you want Did you want closing music?
We have to find an adapter to get our phones plugged.
We're still going through the ringer of everything, trying to adapt to being back. But we're happy to be back. Here we are. We're happy. Baldwin and the Berg. Austin Bechtel, say your two names.
I'm Nathan Breisinger.
And I'm Andrew Goldvash.
Appreciate it as always. We will see you next Friday at 9:30 on RMU Radio.